Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and on the telephone today, as this is the final day for our new studios being set up, and we'll be broadcasting from the studio with a higher technical quality as of this Monday, and being able to get our guests back on. Today, we're going to talk about how eating blueberries every day improves your heart health. That's from the University of East Anglia, which is in the United Kingdom, published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, and about 17 other important studies. Just so that you know, each day, every 24 hours, my scholars and residents and myself, I spend probably 4 hours a day reviewing the international scientific literature, looking for quality studies that allow us to live a longer and healthier life, and wherever possible to slow down and even reverse the aging process, wherever possible to reverse what we thought was irreversible damage to our heart or our brain or our central nervous system. And as a result, you're getting information that if you listen every day, at the end of 2 years, you would have a master's degree in public health education. And if you've been listening for a long time, as many of you have, you're at the valued PhD level when it comes to insights. That means you have a long time ahead of everyone else who's not paying attention, and for whatever reason, they're choosing not to, which is their right. But you're choosing to pay attention and choosing to apply the information that's reasonable. If it doesn't sound reasonable, if it's not documentable, if it's not reproducible, don't use it. But everything that we share with you mandates that those criteria are used. Today, we're also going to take a look at some things that are important. I didn't have a chance yesterday to give a commentary on the martyrdom of Julian Assange from Chris Hedges. Today, I will give you that and my own input. Also, I was listening to a radio program. It's not important which radio program, but it was talking about how Joe Biden is the lead Democrat and he would be good for America and he follows in Obama's footsteps. Well, I'm going to show what happens when someone is detached from historical facts. So what I'm doing today is I'm doing my own commentary based on real research and scholarly research where I took every one of Joe Biden's policy throughout his entire career, and I've compared it to Bernie Sanders. And you will see for yourself how that comparison wins out. And if you're not aware of this history, and you're just losing all cognitive reference to the past, then you just might like someone because you like their personality. Or how many times have we heard people say, that person sounded presidential, that person looked presidential. Well, I don't care how you sound, how you look. It's what is your history? We all have histories. What is the history, the total sum of that history in allowing us to progress as people, saving the planet, human life, and respecting one another and stopping conflict? That commentary will happen today. Also, why are they going after Max Blumenthal and Julian Assange and some of the best reporters? Why are people who have really outstanding qualifications for telling the truth and being ahead of the curve, like Glenn Greenwald at The Intercept, why is the left abandoning them? Why is it that the left is not looking honestly at the coup that occurred in America over the last 2.5 years, where the historical liberal society that was the first to raise the clarion call that there's something wrong within the intelligence communities and the FBI and CIA and National Security Agency spying on citizens, targeting citizens, and they should be held accountable? They never have. They've been exposed in 1976 by the Church Committee, but not since. And now you're praising them? You're defending them? You're hiring them? Since when did you think it was a good idea to hire a CIA director and a person who's lied before Congress, Clapper, National Security Agency, who are a part of the deep state, to be color commentators on MSNBC and CNN? When did that become justifiable? And yet it is. And there's going to be a day of reckoning, because instead of dealing with the 50 issues, progressive issues that we have highlighted on this program, everything from reversing Citizens United to reestablishing the Glass-Steagall Act to separate banks so that there's savings banks that are protected and separate from casino gambling, which is Wall Street, stopping foreign intervention, closing military bases around the world, cutting the defense budget by 80%, and still it would be more than they need, and stop signing pledges to Israel that no matter what they do, we will back them. These are stupid things when they're enacted for the wrong reason by the wrong people, and the media supported them, like the National Defense Authorization Act and the Patriot Act and offshoring of to black ops sites for torture. This shouldn't be allowed. So why not pay some attention to the real things, rebuilding our infrastructure, planting a tree and trees in the United States are making that effort, and hiring people from local communities of the 102 million who are not included in the 3.8% unemployment figure, bringing the real figure to 27% unemployment. Why not help the 46 million Americans go to bed each night food deprived? Why not put jobs in their hands by regreening America? It can be done. Who would be against regreening America when the science is there that every tree you plant helps capture carbon that otherwise goes in the atmosphere and increase global warming? Now, there will be some because they've been paid to be global warming deniers. But the rest of America is on board, and we should take advantage of this moment, but we're not. Because everything is Russia, Trump, 24/7. It's an embarrassment of excess. Even when America's leading scholar on Russia and his wife, he's married to the woman who's one of the top people at the Council on Foreign Relations. She also runs The Nation magazine. And that's the only place you're going to see any of his work published. He's persona non grata. And yet, look at his credentials. Look at the accuracy of his scholarship. Look at what he has told us that we needed to hear about the truth in the entire left community. Has turned their back on that truth. So what does that tell you about who we can trust today and who has been compromised? So we're going to deal with all this on today's show. And we start by a study about blueberries. Now, I've done many studies on berries, and especially blueberries, but just eating a cup of blueberries a day reduces the risk factor for cardiovascular disease. That's important, and this was published in the respected peer-reviewed journal, American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. 150 grams is not much. That's 5 ounces. That's a cup, actually less than a cup, of blueberries. Daily reduces the risk of cardiovascular disease by up to 15%. Now, mind you, that's just one thing. If you took vitamin D at 2,000 units a day, if you took vitamin C at 4,000 milligrams a day, if you exercise each day, it brings it down even further or increases your non-risk factor substantially. If you go to a vegan diet, wow, you almost eliminate most of the risk factors for heart disease. Just blueberries, something easy, simple, inexpensive, available. And it also says that from the EUA's Norwich Medical School that having metabolic syndrome, that's your diabetes or prediabetes, significantly increase the risk of heart disease, stroke, and diabetes. And it says that this is one thing you can take that helps lower the bad cholesterol, that's blueberries, lowers blood pressure, that's high, blueberries, lowers blood sugar from diabetics, prediabetics, blueberries, helps burn excessive body fat, blueberries. So, on all levels, blueberries is a key. We should be having it each day. You've heard me mention a nutrient that I believe is very important and underappreciated. It's quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N. This is from the University of Alberta, and they found that it really is good for your interstitial and vascular smooth muscles. And it would affect your gallbladder smooth muscle, your bladder smooth muscle. In particular, it could relax gallbladder smooth muscles. And the results of this study were published in the journal Nutrition Research. Now, just so you know, when you eat an apple or eat an onion, you're eating quercetin. Quercetin is a phytoestrogen and a flavonoid that can relax the interstitial and vascular smooth muscles. And It's great if you have spider veins, you bruise easily, you might have had some infection on the skin. It's good for eliminating excess yeast, candida. It's good for the immune system. It's anti-cancer. It's antibacterial. It kills viruses. In fact, I remember going out to the Linus Pauling Institute, and I met with a Dr. Jirala. He wanted to show me an experiment they were doing. He had the HIV virus in culture, and he was showing me what could be used to kill it that was non-toxic, because they were concerned about the high level of toxicity of the antiretrovirals, like AZT. He was using quercetin to kill the HIV virus. So when I came back from that trip, I immediately began to implement high levels, not 100, but you know, like 5 to 10,000 milligrams of quercetin with vitamin C drips each day. And we made major progress in reversing all AIDS-related diseases or improving their conditions in 1,200 persons with full-blown AIDS at the Tri-State Healing Center. But those who went on an advanced protocol that I created, we all eight reversed their HIV status completely, meaning they no longer had any diseases. They were totally healthy. All their immune markers were normal, but they went from HIV positive to negative. Not my proof, the laboratories, the Quest Labs and Roche Labs of Hoffman Roche, they did all the blood work up, and we had it done monthly for these people for years. And it stayed that way. In fact, just recently, one of those people from 1988 reached out, lives up in Woodstock, and said he's still as healthy as can be today, and he was near death before he started his treatment. So none of this got any news, and not surprisingly, because the media is substantially impacted by the pharmaceutical industry and their advertising. And if you have something that's costing thousands of dollars to treat per month versus something that's relatively inexpensive, hundreds of dollars, what are you going to select? So the fear of having more than one approach limited the entire approach on AIDS. You could have 1,000 different drugs as long as they were patented and toxic and made promises, but you wouldn't allow a single natural substance nor diet or anything else was given any credibility. And yet that, in the end, is what did more than anyone else. And that's the most important hidden story on public health of the entire 21st century. And no one is ever going to tell that story honestly. They can't. In any case, also, quercetin increases nitric oxide synthesis. Now, from Barcelona Institute for Global Health, a study about the exposure to airborne metal pollution associated with death. Now, we all know that heavy air pollution is a killer. There's no controversy around that at all. One area of China, in northern China, where their heavy mining has been historically, a minimum acknowledged of 1 million of its residents die each year. Now, if that's the official figure, you got to figure the real figure is substantially higher. But then when they did autopsies several years ago in Los Angeles for people who died in accidents who were young teenagers, they found tiny holes in their lungs from particulate pollutants, and those were coming from China. Remember, when something is in the air and it's lightweight, it's going to be blown as far as the wind can carry it. That means a major contributor to the West Coast pollution level is China's coal-burning fire stacks. So we have it bad in the United States. I remember I was doing a lecture in Los Angeles, and the person who picked me up at the airport to take me to the lecture, turns out he was a professor, and his daughter had just returned the day before from China, where she was studying, and she was in Peking. And she told me something interesting about the pollution. She said, the pollution there is so bad that everybody has to wear these masks. And she said she was walking down the street just a week before, and she held her hand straight out, her arm clear out in front of her, and opened her fingers, and she couldn't see her fingers. That's how bad it is. Now imagine the people there, like children, who are breathing that in. How much shorter your life is going to be. Well, there is an ample evidence that air pollution, specifically airborne particulate matter, is associated with an increased risk of premature death. And there's lots of different particulate matters in the air. So the cleaner the air, the healthier your lungs and heart, the longer you're going to live. This was published in the Journal of Environmental International. And they looked at 11,382 participants belonging to what was called the Gazelle, G-A-Z-E-L, cohort, who were living in rural areas throughout France, a cohort that had been followed for 20 years. And the data showed that you compared their life out in the country, where there's lots of open land and trees and shrubs, versus those in the cities, and they live a longer life, in no small measure because they're not exposed to the same level of the 13 elements, like aluminum, arsenic, radium, chromium, copper, iron, mercury, sodium, nickel, lead, and zinc and others that are in the air. It's the same here. So you, at some point, you have to weigh up two issues. Have you stayed too long where you're living? At one time, it was a healthy environment. Is it still healthy today? Or is it polluted? Can you change the level of that pollution? If not, what should be your fallback position? And if you have no fallback position and you feel that you're helpless, then you're going to end up becoming a double victim, a victim of your own inability to move because of the circumstance of your life, but also the victim of the pollution. Now, I give you this because the one particulate matter you will not see, taste, or smell, but it's present, is your cell phone, your computers, the blue light, and now G5 or 5G. It'll be everywhere, and you're going to see the largest increase in environmental illnesses in world history. I predict with the full implementation over the next 3 to 5 years of 5G technology that we will see more people succumbing to autoimmune diseases and immune-related conditions than ever before in our history. It'll be the Great Purge. And yet the whole while, Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, who enabled this, our Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, that allowed it, and the industries, the tech industries, the telecom industries, who created it, no one will take responsibility. It'll be another cigarette smoke legacy, another asbestos legacy. It'll take a long time before it's adjudicated. But I'm just giving a heads up now. I would not live in a building that had 5G in it. I value my health over everything else. Everything else is second. Because I don't believe that anything is worth sacrificing your life for. I'm not talking about being in a war that's necessary to defend your country. There are sacrifices that are made. But I'm talking about where you have a choice and you choose to stay intentionally ignorant. If you stay intentionally ignorant, then by extension, you're not looking at yourself as part of the problem. So you don't have to do anything. And this is a situation where others are doing something. 5G is quite simply the most dangerous environmental pollutant we have ever experienced. Nuclear, if it went off everywhere, would be more so, but it hasn't gone off everywhere. But where it has gone off for decades, it's left a deadly legacy. This is leaving electromagnetic frequency pollution level right now in our bodies. And also from Catholic University, a compound found in apples can protect the body against heart disease. This was published in Nutrition Research. They found that glycoglucan, a compound found in apples, can protect against heart injury and lower the risk of coronary heart disease. That's important. This is a polysaccharide, and it contains high amounts of arabinose, which is important for the body. In any case, is protective. So an apple a day does indeed help you live a longer life. Then we should eat more apples and drink more fresh-made apple juice. Even peeling the skin of the apple, because a lot of the nourishment is in the skin. Peel 4 apples, skins. You can juice the rest, and because you're not going to get juice out of the skin, and throw those apple skins, 4 of them, into a blender in your smoothie, and then you're getting a lot of good fiber and quercetin also, but you're getting this new thing. University of Edinburgh. Yoga improves health in later life. That's good. Over the age of 40, if you practice yoga, you're more likely to be in better mental and physical shape, and yoga improves physical function, mental well-being, and that's important. And once you hit 60, you really need this. It helps regulate breathing, better muscle strength, balance, and flexibility. So, all good to do yoga. And also today, 1 week of eating an organic diet, just all organic, was found to dramatically lower toxic levels of pesticides in your body. This is from the University of California, Berkeley, and San Francisco. Now, we all know that toxins seemingly are everywhere these days, from the food we eat to the air we breathe, the water we drink. So you may feel apathetic and say there's nothing you can do to avoid being exposed to dangerous substances. However, this study shows that you have a lot more control over it than what you might think, as switching to organic food for just 1 week can bring about a dramatic decrease in your brain's toxic levels. And that's important. Also, your whole body's toxic levels, your liver, your kidneys. 7 days on an organic diet. All right? And it helps. Now, mind you, I'm not telling you to go ahead and add in a chlorophyll from cilantro and chlorella, which speeds the whole process up even more, makes it more complete. Just that alone does it. From the University of Colorado, a presentation before the American Society of Clinical Oncology, oncologists now see the benefit of medical marijuana. There are 22,000 studies in their own medical literature on PubMed, but here's the caveat. They're not comfortable prescribing it. Why not? If you know that something is non-toxic, natural, and is specific in helping with lung cancer, brain cancer, seizures, autism, why wouldn't you recommend it? It didn't tell us why it was not being recommended. It just said they didn't want to recommend it. I'm not going to guess. I have my own opinion. You have yours. But it tells us a lot about the doctors who were first to do no harm, and yet chemotherapy by itself causes up to 50% of the deaths from cancer. Even if initially the tumors disappear, which they might do, due to a combination of radiation and chemotherapy. But then you have zero immune system left, so a year later, 15 months later, the cancer comes back, and nothing works, and the patient dies. It's never attributed to the treatment. It's always attributed to the disease. Also, heartburn drugs are linked to a fatal heart and kidney disease and stomach cancer. From Washington University in St. Louis, you really increase your death risk substantially the longer these drugs are used, and yet this never precautionary note given. So extended use of popular drugs to treat heartburn and ulcers and acid reflux have been associated with an increased risk of premature death. Now, a study by researchers at Washington University School of Medicine, St. Louis, and Veterans Affairs, St. Louis Healthcare Systems, has linked long-term use of such drugs called proton pump inhibitors, or PPIs, to fatal cases of cardiovascular disease, chronic kidney disease, and upper gastrointestinal cancers. Now, mind you, it's not a little issue because you've got 15 million Americans being prescribed these PPIs, and millions of Americans more purchase the drugs over the counter and take them without being under a doctor's care, and often indefinitely. This is published in the current issue of the British Medical Journal. There are so many natural approaches to helping with these conditions, and they're not being shared. You heard me mention in a recent program that depression increases the risk of multiple diseases, including death. This is in the University of Queensland. Women who experience symptoms of depression are at risk of developing multiple chronic diseases. That's what they had to say. These days, many people suffer from multiple chronic diseases like diabetes and heart disease and stroke and cancer. So the scientists looked at how women progress in the development of these chronic diseases before and after the onset of depressive symptoms. And following this for 20 years, they found that in the Australian longitudinal study on women's health, that if you have depression and you have a disease, you're far more likely to have that manifest as other diseases, and you're going to have a shorter lifespan. So what is the takeaway good message in here? The good message is that depression is not due to a brain chemical imbalance, as you've been led to believe, and therefore you need Zoloft, Effexor, you know, a Paxil. These I would never recommend to anyone, ever. I've done two documentaries on it. I've written scientific papers, published in the Towns Letter for Physicians on this. There are natural, non-toxic ways of dealing with life issues. It was interesting, there's a whole major attack now on a very famous feminist, a woman who I have a lot of respect for. I don't agree with everything she says, but on a lot of issues, I do. And she's been around, she was part of the second wave, and she's not one of those insiders. She doesn't crave to be on everybody's, you know, invite list, our favorite feminist. She's a philosopher. She specializes in looking at the history of art and the dynamics of it. Do you know who I'm talking about yet? Teaches out of Philadelphia. Now there's a movement to get her thrown out of school because she dares say that, why don't we stop having this war of men against women, and especially the war against men should hate themselves because they're men, as if all men are the same. How will we never, never allow that kind of prejudicial generalization to get away with if it was talking about women or seniors or people of color, any color or ethnicity? But boy, we have no voices standing up and saying, hold on a second. Are you claiming that just being a man is some disease? Yes, kill them all. No, it's not right, and it should be called out. When you stay silent in that type of prejudice, it then begins to believe in its own legitimacy. And she spoke out against it. I watched four of her talks, and in any case, she was one of the people I interviewed for the book that Barbara Seaman, a wonderful human being. We wrote the 1,600-page book for women only. It was very popular. Over 252 feminists were interviewed for the book. And I wrote a whole long history on the before there were gods, there were goddesses. This is something that's rarely known. Anyway, I'm not going to get into the whole history of it. But before people talk about things, they should take a moment and do their homework and look at the real authentic history and see what role the family played. What role did men play? What role did women play? How did they cooperate? Where was their communication or lack of communication? How were we able to evolve and survive, even amongst the most difficult challenges and times? And then you get a completely different perspective of who really is in control and how they play one against the other. In any case, she said that, and she was talking about her own family, Italians, about how when they went to the beach, the whole family went to the beach. You might have three generations at the beach together. And during the day, the women controlled the children and the house and everything that went in to their learning, their teaching, their schooling, their character development, their morals, their ethics, their sensitivity. And each one played a different role. They cooperated, but they had their own domains of authority. And she said, there was never a time when you did not have an older person, male or female, aunt, uncle, grandparent, who would always be there when you had a crisis to help you through it. There would always be someone, even if your parents weren't the people you felt comfortable talking about something with, that there'd be someone who you would feel comfortable with, who you loved and knew and respected. So you always had people who would sit with you. Today we would call them our wise elders, the wise women, the wise men. And it almost always started with the wise women in her family and also in most of the Mediterranean families. And now compare how you would deal with issues and resolve them or better understand them so you could have a transition away from the angst and anxiety and stress to a healthier state of mind. And all that began to dissolve with the end of the nuclear family and, or let's say the pre-end of the nuclear family and now with almost no family, where most families today in the United States, at least almost 40% of all families in the United States today are professional families, completely different in their structure, responsibilities, and time allotted, and sharing authority and guidance for the younger people and what they share with each other. Lawyers, doctors, engineers, accountants, architects, people who have advanced degrees, who did a lot of homework, studied, they certainly deserve where they're at, because it didn't come easy. And for those who want to mock people who are wealthier, or let's say upper middle class, and educated, try doing what they do to see how easy it isn't. It's hard. But in any case, along the way, the one thing that got left behind, not in all cases, certainly, but in most, was quality time to be there with the children, to be there as a guide to them, but not to be there as their best friends. And to be there so that when they came to a crisis, you could help them through it, better understand it. And today we have nannies, and we have before school, after school counselors. We have a whole retinue of service industry people who do not have the same commitment nor harmonizing energy with our children that we as parents should have. So where does that leave the child? When careers are first, earning an income is up there, keeping in the social circle of relevance, which is Washington, D.C. You talk about the most dysfunctional city in America. Oh, my God. I was on the air every day for 36 years, longest-running daily radio show in Washington, D.C.'s history on PFW, our sister station, until I quit out of disgust for how the station was being run and the abandonment of the audience. In any case, that's a separate issue. But I had a chance being on every day of the week and lecturing down there on a regular basis to meet an awful lot of people. So what's happening today, this Mueller, Russia, all the time with nothing else mattering, no other important policies being implemented that would really help people, that is the culture of Washington. Being acknowledged by being into social circles, belonging to groups, going to dinner parties, going to golf matches, going to places to socialize and racquetball, and how you're selected by someone who's significant and suddenly you feel, wow, I've been invited by such and such at General Dynamics or some other corporation to play racquetball. What does that mean? And the people know what it means. It means you have been selected. You're being selected. You're being auditioned over the next month, 2 months, 5 months, 6 months, until the day comes when you realize that's your future, that's your allegiance. And that's where everything matters, that you're not an outsider. It's irrelevant. They could care less in Washington whether you're Democrat or Republican. They don't care because behind the scenes in the day-to-day life, it's all about your position of power. I want to commend Representative Cortez because she made a statement, I believe it might have been yesterday, about ending the process of allowing people to go from government jobs right into becoming lobbyists, where over 40% of all people working in the federal government end up as lobbyists. And the lobbyists have only one loyalty, and that is to their paycheck. And to that means they can take on tyrants like Saudi Arabia, and they're indifferent. So what they tell you in the front groups, how you end up in a think tank, you're invited into a think tank. You don't go apply for a job at a think tank. You don't go apply for a job at a foundation. You don't go to apply for any of the jobs in Washington, D.C. To the top law firms, do you think it's an accident that the former attorney general got a job at the biggest law firm in Washington, D.C., the most powerful, representing the worst people in the world? That was all planned. You are selected. You obey by the rules. You don't embarrass anyone. You don't uncover anything. You don't expose anything. You attack the people who are the whistleblowers. You attack the Julian Assange. You attack the Max Blumenthal's and John Pilger's and people like Chris Hedges. You attack them to protect the people who are ultimately inviting you in. So you're invited into think tanks, foundations. You're invited into the business roundtable. You're invited into the Council on Foreign Relations. You're invited to be on these different boards, and you're well compensated for it. That's the real world, and that is never exposed by the media because the media is complicit up to its eyeballs.
And you are listening to The Gary Null Show here over listener-sponsored WBAI in New York. Gary is here live with us with his thoughts and his experience and his insight about how the country is being run and about Washington, D.C., and about here in New York and how we are here at this radio station and in this culture. And hi, Gary.
Hi, Linda.
Nice to talk
and
to you.
Thank you for taking a few moments to come on. This is the last day of fundraising.
That's it.
And we've raised somewhere in the neighborhood of about 155,000 or so.
More like 250,000, something like that.
Oh, that's great.
And
good.
And your listeners have come through splendidly for this listener-sponsored station. Your listeners are just absolutely wonderful, wonderful in responding to our various gifts that we give when we come on together and go through what's being offered, but also becoming buddies. Your listeners we have more buddies to your program than any other program. We started this in May of last year. I wasn't here then, but that's when it started, where people could call in and they could be a buddy to a particular program. So for your program, since May, we have 40 buddies. So what that means, and they're also contributing at a higher rate because we can be a WBAI buddy, which is a sustaining member to WBAI, for $10 a month. Most of your listeners who have become buddies are donating $15 a month. And what that does is it gives WBAI a certain amount of money that we can count on to pay bills. So that's why it's so wonderful when people call in 516-620-3602 and they say, we want to become a buddy in the name of the Gary Null Show. Some people call in and they say, we want to become a, can I be a buddy for all WBAI programs? And others call in and say, I want to be a buddy in the name of the Gary Null Show. And we have many people who have been doing this four-year program, and we are encouraging on this last day that Gary and I can be on together asking for money for this particular spring fund drive to call 516-620-3602 and become a buddy in the name of Gary's show, in the Gary Null Show. Now, I remember years and years and years and years ago, Gary, your show used to be called Natural Living.
That's correct. It was called Natural Living. It was called Natural Living for 25 years, but for the last 25 years, it's now called The Gary Null Show, and for no particular reason.
Because it's your show. So, The Gary Null Show, call 516-620-3602. Become a member of WBAI. Become a sustaining member for $10 or more dollars a month. You get a wonderful tote bag, a large tote bag, because we're no longer going to be using plastic bags. You can carry your groceries in it. And I'm sure that Gary will throw in some other kind of gift into that tote bag for you. If you become a sustaining member to WBAI at 516-620-3602, you'll maybe receive a gift, a DVD gift, one of Gary's films or something else that we will throw into the gift bag. And you will become a member of WBAI. 516-620-3602 is the number to call to become a buddy to WBAI. Do you like the idea of a buddy system, Gary?
Yes.
It's good, right?
Yes.
It's good. Then we know that you are supporting WBAI in the final drive here to support this listener-sponsored station. Unlike other stations, WBAI is not beholden to any corporation. WBAI is 100% listener-sponsored. So we'll just give another moment or so for listeners to call in and to become buddies or to become subscribers to the station. 516-620-3602 is the number to call, or you can text WBAI to 41444 if you use a smartphone. And again, thank you so much, those of you who have become listener sponsors to WBAI. And I know that Gary has a commentary he was going to do, or he's going to do, about Julian Assange. And this is
I'm doing a commentary to the martyrdom of Julian Assange.
And this is just in that there's an independent expert from the UN-backed Human Rights Council who visited Julian Assange in London in prison. And they're saying that Assange showed all symptoms typical for prolonged exposure to psychological torture. Today, Niels Milsner, who's with the Human Rights Office, he's the special rapporteur on torture, who visited Assange on May 9th with two medical experts who is skilled in examining potential victims of torture and ill treatment, said it was obvious that Assange's health had been affected by the extremely hostile and arbitrary environment which he faced for years. U.S. authorities, of course, are accusing Assange of violating the Espionage Act over publication of secret documents. Sweden.
That in and of itself, I spoke last night, Linda, with a constitutional lawyer who said that will be thrown out because the Supreme Court ruled in the Ellsberg case, when both the Washington Post and the New York Times published them, the Boston Globe as well, that you could not stop the information from being published if it could be shown to represent something in the public interest and was accurate. Well, the Pentagon Papers were accurate. It showed where Lyndon Johnson and his generals had lied about the need to be in Vietnam and our so-called victories and progress, when none of that was true. Similarly, Assange was a publisher and therefore was sharing information and has with hundreds of newspapers around the United States and around the world, and therefore represented the same rights. It's a freedom of speech. It's the First Amendment that the United States, in the United States, the First Amendment allows freedom of the press. So therefore, it will be thrown out on that. Now, as far as they're using either the Arcane Logan Act or the earlier act from, I believe it's 1917, Espionage Act, which Obama used more than any other president, and to incarcerate people who were telling the truth, whistleblowers. In point of fact, it was not Assange who created or stole the information. And since it cannot be shown that he stole the information, meaning he was not Chelsea Manning. Manning could be charged under the Espionage Act and was. As others like Snowden, Edward Snowden, stole the information, and held the National Security Agency. The people who steal the information can be brought in under those acts. The person that publishes it as a legitimate site cannot be. So at the end of the day, the moment this goes before any ethical judge, and there are a handful left in the United States,
yeah,
it'll be thrown out.
There was also in the charge that he was helping to decode. He was helping Manning to decode, and but that never actually happened.
Never happened, and so they're not going to win on this. It's just a political tool to embarrass him until he's so weak and so burned out that the world goes on and he's forgotten.
He was in the Ecuadorian embassy in London since 2012.
Yeah. Yeah, within in a very small space. And so I'm going to leave in a moment here to get to Assange's commentary. I want to give in also the difference between Joe Biden, the corporate Democrat representing Hillary, and Bernie Sanders representing the ideals of the people. And I don't take sides in these. I simply provide for those who need a historical reference, may not have the wherewithal or the time to do their own research. I've done the research. I've published the results so you can read for yourself, because we don't want to get carried away by believing in someone who we haven't studied their background to see what have they actually voted on. And I'm going to do that. And by the way, when I mentioned that I support Representative Cortez, here's the latest from her. She says she calls for a ban on revolving door, as study shows two-thirds of recently departed lawmakers from Washington, D.C. now are K Street lobbyists. Quote, no lawmaker should be cashing in on their public service and selling their contacts and expertise to the highest bidder. Good for her. We need someone to start calling out these politicians, especially the generals, the 4-3 and 4-star generals and admirals and joint chiefs of staffs. They're all pro-war all the time, and that's why we keep intervening in countries we shouldn't. And for someone to stand up and have the courage to call them out, I fully support that, and we'll be doing more. I'll do an article next week on the power and corruption of the lobbyist, and I'll be interviewing a former lobbyist who went to jail and has his epiphany and is going to tell the truth about the entire sordid mess. So that's coming up. So last call is this. We need, in between the fund drives, the bills to amount, but we have no income coming in. Income for lights, rental the studio, though we've been very blessed to have a landlady who is very thoughtful and supportive of BAI's mission and therefore gives us a preferential rent, and that is appreciated. I've never personally met her. At least I'm not aware that I've met her, and I might have met her in some meeting.
She's a fan, though.
But I do know that I want to thank her for being thoughtful to our station's needs at a time when it's desperate. And to all the volunteers who come in, I want to thank them as well. So in between fund drives, we have to have some income flow. So when you become a buddy, that means each month a small amount of money is taken out of your account and goes to pay for the operating overhead of the station. It's a very practical and pragmatic way of helping us in our hour of need until we can get back up on our feet. And we're making every effort to get back up on our feet. And there's going to be lots of positive changes over the next year. So it's an exciting time. I'll be in my 44th year here as of January. So I'm looking forward to it. So Linda, give the number again. People can call.
Yes, 516-620-3602 is the number to call. And that's exactly right, that this provides income between the fund drives. And Gary and I have talked about, and with the others as well, of trying to change it up so that we don't have to come on the air as often to pitch and raise funds over the year, but instead to have something like this going where we have sustaining members who contribute to the station every month. It's not very painful to have 10 or more dollars taken out every month, but it does mean a lot for WBAI. It keeps the lights on, pay for the transmitter, and other bills that we have coming in. So 516-620-3602 is the number to call to be a buddy in the name of the Gary Null Show or in the name of all shows. 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. Join the callers calling now. Become a WBAI buddy. You get a tote bag, and there are some other perks that come with becoming a WBAI buddy, but what you're doing is you're providing a bed for WBAI to be able to have income, year-round income, coming in from listener dollars, which is what's important. 516-620-3602. And I want to leave it to you now, Gary, and with your commentary. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Linda.
Sure.
Linda Perry. Okay. The arrest of Julian Assange eviscerates all pretense of the rule of law and the rights of a free press. The illegalities embraced by the Ecuadorian, British, and United States governments in the seizure of Assange are ominous. They presage a world where the internal workings and abuses, the corruption, the lies and crimes, especially war crimes, carried out by corporate states and the global ruling elite, will be masked from the public. They presage a world where those with the courage and integrity to expose the misuse of power will be hunted down and tortured and subjugated to sham trials and given lifetime prison terms and solitary confinement. They presage an Orwellian dystopia where news is replaced with propaganda, trivia, and entertainment. The arrest of Assange, I fear, mark the official beginning of the corporate totalitarianism that will define our lives. Now, under what law did Ecuadorian President Lenin Moreno capriciously terminate Julian Assange's right to asylum as a political refugee? Under what law did Moreno authorize British police to enter the Ecuadorian embassy, diplomatically sanction sovereign territory to arrest a neutralized citizen of Ecuador? Under what law did Prime Minister Theresa May then order the British police to grab Assange, who has never committed a crime? Under what law did President Donald Trump demand the extradition of Assange, who is not a U.S. citizen and whose news organization is not based in the United States? I'm not sure government attorneys are skillfully doing what has become a ritual for the corporate state, using specious legal arguments to eviscerate enshrined rights by judicial fiat. This is how we have the right to privacy with no privacy. This is how we have the free elections funded by corporate money, covered by a compliant corporate media and under iron corporate control. This is how we have a legislative process in which corporate lobbyists write the legislation and corporate indentured politicians voted into law. This is how we have the right to due process with no due process. This is how we have a government whose fundamental responsibility is to protect citizens that orders and carries out the assassination of its own citizens, such as the radical cleric Anwar al-Khali and his 16-year-old son. This is how we have a press legally permitted to publish classified information and a publisher sitting in jail in Britain awaiting extradition to the United States, as in a whistleblower, Chelsea Manning, in a jail cell in the United States. Britain will use as its legal cover for the arrest and extradition request from Washington based upon conspiracy charges. This legal argument in a functioning judiciary will be thrown out of court immediately. Unfortunately, we no longer have a functioning judiciary. We will soon know if Britain as well lacks one. Assange was granted asylum in the embassy in 2012 to avoid extradition to Sweden to answer questions about sexual offense allegations that were eventually dropped. Assange and his lawyers also argued that if he was put in Swedish custody, he would be extradited to the United States. Once he was granted asylum and Ecuadorian citizenship, the British government refused to grant Assange safe passage to the London airport, trapping him in the embassy for 7 years as his health steadily deteriorated. The Trump administration will seek to try Assange on charges that he conspired with Manning in 2010 to steal the Iraq and Afghan war logs obtained by WikiLeaks, the 500,000 internal documents leaked by Manning from the Pentagon and the State Department, along with the 2007 video of U.S. helicopter pilots nonchalantly gunning down Iraqi civilians, including children and two Reuters journalists, provided copious evidence of the hypocrisy, indiscriminate violence, routine use of torture, lies, bribery, and crude tactics of intimidation by the U.S. government in its foreign relations and wars in the Middle East. Assange and WikiLeaks allowed us to see the inner, honest workings of empire, the most important role of the press, and for this they became the empire's prey. The U.S. government lawyers will attempt to separate WikiLeaks and Assange from the New York Times and the British paper, The Guardian, both of which also published the leaked material from Manning, by implicating Assange in the theft of the documents. Manning was repeatedly and often brutally pressured during his detention or her detention and trial to implicate Assange in the seizure of the material, something she steadfastly refused to do. She's currently in jail because of her refusal to testify without her lawyer in front of a grand jury assembled for the Assange case. President Barack Obama granted Manning, who was given a 35-year sentence, clemency after she served 7 years in military prison. Once the documents and videos provided by Manning and Assange and WikiLeaks were published and disseminated by news organizations like the New York Times and The Guardian, the press callously and foolishly turned on Assange. News organizations that had run WikiLeaks material for several days soon served as conduits in a black propaganda campaign to discredit Assange and WikiLeaks. This coordinated smear campaign was detailed in a leaked Pentagon document prepared by the Cyber Counterintelligence Assessment Branch and dated March 8, 2008. The document called on the U.S. to eradicate, quote, the feeling of trust that is WikiLeaks' center of gravity and destroy Assange's reputation. Assange, who with the Manning leaks had exposed the war crimes, lies, and criminal manipulations of the George Bush administration, soon earned the ire of the Democratic Party establishment by publishing 70,000 hacked emails belonging to the National Democratic Committee and senior Democratic officials. The emails were copied from the accounts of John Podesta, Hillary Clinton's campaign manager. The Podesta emails exposed the donation of millions of dollars from Saudi Arabia and Qatar, two of the major funders of Islamic State, to the Clinton Foundation. It exposed the $657,000 Goldman Sachs paid to Hillary Clinton to give talks, a sum so large it can only be considered a bribe. It exposed Clinton's repeated mendacity. She was caught in the emails, for example, telling the financial elites she wanted, quote, open trade and open borders, and believed Wall Street executives were best positioned to manage the economy, a statement that contradicted her campaign statement. It exposed the Clinton campaign efforts to influence the Republican primaries to ensure that Trump was the Republican nominee. It exposed Clinton's advanced knowledge of questions in a primary debate. It exposed Clinton as the primary architect of the war in Libya, a war she believed would burnish her credentials as a presidential candidate. So stop and think of that for the moment. The reason, the primary reason that Libya, the number one most advanced technological in healthcare, in education, in freedoms and rights, in safety and quality of life, in all 54 countries, was so that Hillary Clinton would have a better chance of running for office by showing how tough she was. Journals can argue that this information, like the war logs, should have remained hidden, but they can't themselves call themselves journalists. The Democratic leadership, intent on blaming Russia for its election loss charges, that the Podesta emails were obtained by the Russian government hackers, although James Comey, the former FBI director, has conceded that the emails were probably delivered to WikiLeaks by an intermediary. And I've mentioned that on this program in the past. WikiLeaks has done more to expose the abuses of power and crimes of the American empire than any other news organization, 1,000 times more than the New York Times. In addition to the war logs and the Podesta emails, it made public the hacking tools used by the CIA, the National Security Agency, and their interference in foreign elections, including in the French elections. It disclosed the internal conspiracy against the British Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn by Labour members of Parliament. It intervened to save Edward Snowden, who made public the wholesale surveillance of the American public by our intelligence agencies. So now we have Assange under siege. And where is that same media today? Where are the reporters from MSNBC and CNN and the New York Times and Washington Post that have used his material in the past to condemn those that it considered its enemies? Now he is considered the enemy. Shame on the entirety of the American media. It is time that we took back the power that we have abrogated. Thank you, Chris Hedges. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow or on the next program. Have a nice day, everyone.